Hello, this is Angela. Welcome to this edition of the Didcot, Abingdon and Wantage talking newspaper, Dawn, recorded on Wednesday, the 15th of July, 2026. You'll hear a number of news items from the Herald series. I'm the editor this week, and our readers are Maggie, Sandra K, Sandra F and Sue. The recording technicians are Brian and Paul, and in the back office we have Alison. We start this week with an item about a climate action event run by young school children at the Beacon in Wantage.
Hello, this is Sue. More than 60 children attend conference on Green Future. Pupils and teachers gathered for a climate action event focused on building a greener future in Oxfordshire. More than 60 children attended the conference at the Beacon in Wantage, where they shared ideas, solutions and hope for addressing environmental challenges. Alan McPherson, Director of Sustainable Wantage, said, "The intent was to provide a platform for pupil voices to be heard on improving their school and to feel they are part of a wider community beyond their school." Held on Thursday, July the 2nd, the event was the first sustainability conference for local schools in the area. Mr. McPherson said the conference was one of several initiatives to enhance Sustainable Wantage's engagement with local schools that started in 2025. Attendees included pupils from Stanford in the Vale C of E Primary, St James's C of E Primary, the Hendreds C of E School, Wantage Primary Academy, Grove C of E Primary, St Nicholas C of E Primary and King Alfred's Academy. Students presented climate action plans, energy saving schemes, school eco councils, pollinator planting, habitat creation, and recycling activities. Groups also visited activity stalls hosted by local organisations covering waste, reuse, biodiversity, energy, food, travel, adaptation, and climate action. Hazel Pittard from Sustainable Wantage's school engagement team said, "I am passionate about helping young people and schools to understand the positive, practical steps they can take to address challenges our planet faces today and tomorrow." Jo Harvey, coordinator at Sustainable Wantage, said, "An outcome of the conference will be a network to support school staff involved in sustainable activities at school, facilitated and supported by Sustainable Wantage." Ollie Glover, MP, attended the event. Mr. Glover said, "It's great to see local schools and organisations come together to share knowledge and support young people taking action to reduce their impact on the climate and environment." Harwell-based robotics and AI company Oxford Dynamics, a sponsor of the event, brought along a robotic dog. Mike Lawton, co-founder and director of Oxford Dynamics, said, "Well done, Sustainable Wantage, on a great initiative. Our robot dog shows children that designing and using technology such as this can replace more energy-intensive options. For example, the robot dog can deliver items and collect data from inhospitable terrain, replacing a trip in a 4x4. Meg Palapane, a teacher at Wantage Primary Academy, said the event reinforced the school's efforts after earning an Eco School Green Flag Award with distinction. Ms. Palapane said, "Thank you to Sustainable Wantage for supporting us when drafting the school's climate action plan. Our pupils have been inspired today with practical ideas to take back to school."
Hello, this is Maggie. Royal Visit recognises vital space boost to economy. King Charles' visit to Harwell Science Campus near Didcot recognises the vital contribution the space sector makes to the UK economy, according to the country space minister. The King was at the Science and Innovation Campus on Friday to officially open the new UK Space and Defence Gateway. Harwell Science and Innovation Campus is the UK's largest space cluster, and the Gateway will be a dedicated hub for the space and defence sectors, driving national and global collaboration between government, the academic world and industry. It will focus on linking innovation to investment, building partnerships to shape tomorrow's space and defence economy, and helping businesses to sustainably start and grow in the UK. The Gateway will be based in a new co-working and event space at the heart of the Harwell Campus Space Cluster. Space Minister Liz Lloyd said, "The opening of the Space and Defence Gateway is a significant moment for the UK space sector, and His Majesty the King's visit to Harwell underlines the vital contribution this cluster makes to our economy. We are committed to building the national capabilities that deliver better space services and create global export opportunities. I look forward to seeing the Gateway deepen the collaboration that turns world-class talent into real breakthroughs." Following the launch, King Charles said to staff gathered at the campus, "I congratulate you for all your efforts and look forward to seeing all the developments that take place here over the years." Among the guests at the campus for the launch was British astronaut Tim Peake, who has visited the International Space Station. For more than 60 years, RAL, Rutherford Appleton Laboratory, Space, has provided the specialist expertise that underpins space applications around the world, including Earth observation work that supports action on climate change, biodiversity loss, and resilience to environmental change. It has contributed to more than 200 instruments in space and has played a key role in establishing the UK as a competitive force in the global space economy. RAL Space is one of the anchor organisations of the Harwell Space Cluster and a cornerstone of the UK space sector. The cluster is Europe's largest concentration of space organisations, supporting more than 120 public and private organisations, alongside more than 330 defence and security organisations. Dr. Barbara Ginelli, Director of Innovation Clusters and Harwell Campus, said, "The Gateway is not only a physical hub with access to multidisciplinary, cutting-edge facilities. It is a new way of working, which brings together civil and defence space stakeholders across government, industry, academia and the investment community to enable a clear pathway between innovation and scale-up and to deliver on national priorities. I look forward to working alongside our partners in the Gateway across the UK and internationally to help our businesses thrive while making a real difference to the world." Dr. Sarah Beardsley, Director of RAL Space, said, "Welcoming His Majesty the King to our state-of-the-art facility has been a real privilege. Pushing the boundaries of technology and testing satellites before launch means we can put innovative ideas into orbit to shape our future."
Hello, this is Sandra Kay. MP raises fears for future of more local post offices. The closure of a post office has sparked fresh concerns about access to vital services. Ollie Glover, MP for Didcot and Wantage, has written to Blair MacDougall, Minister for Small Businesses, about the closure of East Hagbourne Post Office. He raised concerns following the government's response to a petition which defended the closure by pointing to nearby alternatives. Mr. Glover said, "This comment ignores some important local factors of which I would like to make you aware." In his letter, Mr. Glover warned that the Didcot Post Office branch is now also at risk. operated by T.G. Jones, whose restructuring plan has now been approved, the future of the branch is uncertain. A public advert seeking a new operator for Didcot Post Office has already been published, Mr. Glover said. My constituents will not be reassured by the suggestion that services remain within local reach of communities. In fact, the risk of this disruption is only causing greater concern. He also raised issues with the Georgetown Post Office branch in Wantage Road, Didcot, the other alternative listed in the government's response. Constituents have reported long wait times and unexpected closures at the site. Mr. Glover said, "This branch is approximately 1.6 miles away from the East Hagbourne Post Office, a half-hour walk, or more likely a journey that will be driven, adding to the existing significant congestion in Didcot. Additional pressure as a result of this change will only make the situation worse." He warned that recent developments could leave Didcot, a town of 37,000 residents, with just one functioning branch. He said the government's response appeared to assume people are able and willing to travel further for essential services. Mr. Glover said, "Accessibility is crucial for services such as these, and a reliance on alternative post offices, even if these alternative options survive, would disrupt the lives of those who rely on this vital service, particularly vulnerable constituents and those with disabilities." A post office spokesman said, "East Hagbourne Post Office is closed due to the resignation of the postmaster who operates the branch within the community shop, and it has been closed since the 24th of February."
Hello, this is Sandra F. Priority potholes to be repaired revealed. A list of streets where pothole repairs are urgently required in Abingdon is being drawn up by county councillors. Since the winter, Spring Road has been left with potholes running the length of the street linking Farringdon Road and Ox Street. There are at least a dozen large potholes, and it is understood that a cyclist recently fell off his bike after hitting one of them. Although the road is in poor state of repair, the County Council said that there are no immediate plans for its potholes to be fixed. Abingdon South County Councillor Neil Fawcett said Spring Road was in his top three streets in the town where potholes needed to be repaired as a priority. The deputy leader of the county council said, "I am about to submit my list of three roads that I want to see prioritised in my division and plan to include Spring Road, Caldecott Road and one other. Those two are about as bad as each other. I just need to decide on my third." Mr. Fawcett said he would push for work to be carried out in Spring Road at the earliest opportunity. He added, "There is a limited budget and a full resurfacing or surface dressing costs a lot. Even though we are spending a record amount, there is decades of underinvestment to catch up with and only so many roads that can be done each year. The county officers do their best to prioritise in order of need, but everyone obviously notices the road outside their door most." A county council spokesman said, "Potholes are scheduled for repair as and when they are reported to us by the public. Spring Road is not in this year's resurfacing programme." Several potholes on Spring Road have been reported to us and details have been passed on to crews to investigate. A number of residents have reported the Spring Road potholes on the Fix My Street website. One said, "Please repair the potholes on Spring Road. There are also one or two cars parked along this road before 9 a.m, causing havoc with other road users, despite a no parking sign." Abingdon North County Councillor Nathan Lay has also selected three streets as a priority for repairs. He said, "I'm pleased to say my suggestions for 2027 have been accepted, and Appleford Drive, Lark Hill Road and Wootton Road are now in the provisional full resurfacing programme." Last month, resurfacing work was carried out on a nearby Farringdon Road, and a new £48,000 crossing was installed close to one of the main entrances of St Helen and St Catherine's School. The crossing will also assist staff and pupils at neighbouring schools, the Manor Preparatory School and Larkmead School.
Taiwan representative visits Science Hub. The UK's representative in Taiwan visited Harwell and other science hubs to promote international collaboration and explore new opportunities for investment. Ruth Bradley-Jones, MBE, toured Oxfordshire as part of a government roadshow highlighting the UK's top innovative areas. She met with businesses and research organisations to explore opportunities for collaboration, including Harwell Science and Innovation Campus, QEra and RAL Space. Laura Gordon, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Environment and Economy, said, "I'm delighted to have welcomed the UK representative in Taiwan to Oxfordshire and to see continued international interest in what our county has to offer."
Parish backs short trial for Quiet Lane. Plans for a traffic-free quiet lane close to Oxford may get the support of the community if a trial closure was shorter, it has been agreed. Radley Parish Council has suggested piloting Sugworth Lane for Oxfordshire County Council's controversial scheme. County Hall transport bosses say closing the rural road to through traffic would reduce traffic volumes and improve safety. Radley Parish Council recently met to discuss the pilot at an extraordinary meeting. It was concluded that the pilot should last for only 6 months because a shorter pilot would be more palatable to the wider community and produce meaningful engagement. But this won't be going ahead this year, it was agreed. At the meeting, it was agreed that the pilot should begin only after current key roadworks in the vicinity at Lodge Hill and the Oxford Road 12-acre drive roundabout are complete. Lodge Hill is getting two new slip roads built onto the A34 and developers are looking at Peachcroft roundabout. Consequently, with these two big projects, traffic in the area has been made worse. A spokesman for Radley Council added, "Unless it already exists, baseline data will be collected before the pilot is implemented so that the impact of the closure can be measured. It is expected that this would happen after the road reopens from the current gas main works and outside school holidays. It is expected that traffic counts and speed data would be taken at junctions on Kennington Road at its junction with Church Road and both north and south of Sugworth Lane. Old Abingdon Road, also north and south, and St Swithin's Road in Kennington. Baseline traffic and speed data must be gathered once current gas main works are finished and outside of school holidays to ensure accurate measurements. Data collected during the pilot will be shared with neighbouring parishes whose feedback will also be taken into account. The Parish Council said a decision to make the scheme permanent would need to be made jointly with Oxfordshire County Council. However, the Council raised concerns about the process leading up to the pilot. The spokesman said, "It is important to note that the council felt rushed by OCC's imposed deadline, which did not allow for meaningful engagement with the community, and by the limit on the number of roads which will be considered for inclusion in the pilot, and pressured by the lack of funding from OCC for any other measures to control traffic in Sugworth Lane.
The aftermath of a huge crop fire in Oxfordshire, tackled by dozens of firefighters over 8 hours, has been revealed in drone shots. Firefighters were called to extinguish around 100 acres of field in Aston Tyrold, near Cholsey, on Monday afternoon. Flames quickly spread through the crops as a billowing cloud of smoke could be seen more than 30 miles away. Nearby resident Sandra Reed Jennings described it as quite scary and added, "Power went off about 5 p.m. for a couple of hours due to the fire. A roofer working nearby said smoke was horrendous and there were loads of fire engines." Local landscape photographer and licensed drone operator Hedley Thorne took some shots of the fire-ravaged farmland following the blaze, which was extinguished on Monday evening. He posted the striking pictures of the burnt fields near Lollingdon Hill to reveal the damage the blaze did to the landscape. Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service said crews left the scene at 9:20 p.m. on Monday, having dealt with the fire. The cause of the fire is currently unknown, but not thought to be suspicious.
Families are made homeless after huge caravan park fire. Dozens of people were left homeless overnight after a serious fire ripped through a caravan park. People living at Oaks Caravan Park in Fifield Wick, close to Kingston Bagpoys, near Abingdon, do not know when they will be able to return back to their caravans. Some 125 firefighters from 14 fire engines, 7 specialist vehicles and other vehicles were called to the park, home to up to 30 static caravans, on Sunday evening. The site was evacuated, with residents made to leave the scene by emergency services. They were directed to the nearby Kingston Colts Football Club, where support was on hand. On Monday, police were on guard at the closed entrance and exit gates, with dozens of residents still locked out and looking in. Vale of Whitehorse District Council said it had placed 12 households into temporary accommodation. Almost 1,600 homes in the area, including many in Southmoor and Kingston Bagpoys, were left without power as a result of the fire. Residents said they had received no official communication to say when they will be allowed back into the park. "We have not been kept up to date by anybody. We don't know when we can go back in," said one man, who asked for anonymity. A woman from the site said, "We've been locked out of the park with just the clothes on our back. Everything we own is in there and we cannot get in." A third person said, "The owner of the park has been down here doing everything he can to help, but he hasn't been told much either." It was claimed that the fire was started by a barbecue which had spread and caused wider damage. Oxfordshire County Council could not confirm a cause of the fire, but said crews left early on Monday afternoon. What is known from a police officer on scene is that the fire had caused damage to the electrical system, rendering it unsafe for the public to go within the area. He said, "For health and safety reasons, nobody is allowed in here until the all clear has been given." Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks, SSEN, engineers were requested to make safe the electricity network equipment that was damaged. Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Services spokesman, who described the fire as significant, said the fire was being treated as accidental. More than 30 999 calls came in alerting crews to the blaze, with plumes of smoke which could be seen in the sky from afar. Fire crews from services in Dorset and Wiltshire, Berkshire and Buckinghamshire all joined in the effort to control the blaze. 11 further crews remained on scene throughout the night dealing with the incident, with a presence still remaining until early afternoon. An Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service spokesman said, "Fire control staff from the Joint Thames Valley Fire Control Service have spent the past 12 hours coordinating significant resource movements and ensuring fire cover across the wider Thames Valley, along with multiple other incidents. There are no reported injuries from the incident, and the cause of the fire is currently considered accidental." Oxfordshire has now been placed in one of the highest categories for fire risk and severity. The Countryside and Rights of Way Fire Severity Index maps display daily risk levels and five-day forecasts, which help trigger access restrictions on vulnerable open country and common land. Oxfordshire sits on the very high category for fire severity, while other parts of the south move towards exceptional risk. Areas can be low, moderate, high, very high, and exceptional. This comes after the fire at a caravan park near Kingston Bagpoys on Sunday, where firefighters worked through the night to put out flames. Another fire occurred in the early hours of Sunday morning at the Crooked Billet pub in Stoke Row. A spokesperson for the Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue said, "The whole of our region and neighbouring regions have been in the very high category for fire severity. We are now seeing areas to the south moving into exceptional. Our advice is to refrain from having barbecues in the countryside. Leave them for your garden where you have a water supply. Do not discard cigarettes. Put them out fully before disposing of. We see many fires on grass verges where it is believed a cigarette has been flicked out of the window. Take your litter home, especially glass bottles."
Signed Agatha Christie novel sells for £10,000. A rare book dealer has sold one of the most personal Agatha Christie editions to ever come to the market, signed by the author herself, for £10,000. The first edition of Five Little Pigs, inscribed by Christie to her husband, the archaeologist Max Malone, was sold by book dealer Tom W. Ayling of Halbury Park, Wallingford. Mrs. Christie and her husband lived in Winterbrook House in Wallingford from 1934 until the author's death in 1976, and has been celebrated as part of the town's legacy ever since. A statue of the world's best-selling crime author now stands in the Kine Croft, while a Michelin Guide recognised restaurant on St Mary's Street takes its name from the same novel, Five Little Pigs. "It's hard to imagine a book with a stronger claim to Wallingford," she said, Mr Ayling. Five Little Pigs was published in 1943 while Christie and Malone were living at Winterbrook. She inscribed this copy to Max in the month of publication, a gift from one half of one of the great literary and intellectual marriages of the last century to the other. The copy is inscribed on the front end paper, "Max from Agatha, January 1943. Presented to the author's husband in the same year the novel was first published. It also carries a second inscription added later when the novelist gave it to Phyllis Rice, housekeeper at the couple's Devon home, Greenway, in 1969. She signed it to the housekeeper as Agatha Malone, the name by which she was known to her neighbours in Wallingford, and the book remained with Mrs. Rice's family by descent ever since. Agatha and Max met in 1929 at Leonard Woolsey's excavations at Ur, and married in 1930. Throughout the 1930s, Christie accompanied Malone on his archaeological expeditions to the Middle East each spring and autumn, serving as expedition photographer and developing a gift for restoring ancient pottery, all while writing some of her best-known works of detective fiction. Five Little Pigs is dedicated to Egyptologist Stephen Glanville, Malawan's close friend and colleague at the Air Ministry, where both men served during the Second World War.
Traffic to be restricted for Truck Festival. A raft of traffic restrictions will be in place during this year's Truck Festival. Temporary traffic restrictions will be in Steventon and the surrounding area from July 23rd to 27th to ensure public safety during the annual music event. Featherbed Lane, Church Lane, the Causeway and Stocks Lane will face road closures. Featherbed Lane will be closed from the A417 Reading Road Junction to the Abingdon Road Junction. Church Lane and the Causeway will be shut from the southwest end of Church Lane to St Michael's Way Junction. Stocks Lane will be closed from the junction with the Causeway to the junction with Castle Street. The Causeway and St Michael's Way will operate as a one-way street from the High Street and the Causeway Junction southwestwards to the Stocks Lane Junction and northwards on St Michael's Way to Hanley Road. Abingdon Road from the High Street Junction to south of the Packhorse Inn will face a speed reduction from 60 miles per hour to 30 miles per hour. The A417 Reading Road from 30 metres west of the Featherbed Lane Junction to the end of the 40 mile per hour zone eastbound will also see a speed reduction from 40 miles per hour to 30 miles per hour. Stop-go boards will be used as needed at Church Lane Rail Crossing, the Abingdon Road Junction with Featherbed Lane, Rostock Roundabout and at the event.
Arrest after elderly woman scammed. An arrest has been made after a pensioner was allegedly cheated out of money by a fake courier who was reported to have taken her bank card. The elderly woman, who lives in an undisclosed area of Oxfordshire, was contacted by someone claiming to be a bank official last September, who said he was investigating fraudulent activity on her bank card and that he needed to send a courier to collect it. The card was collected by a courier and then used fraudulently to pay for multiple items. So-called courier fraud, which occurs when a fraudster telephones victims plausibly pretending to be a bank, police officer, or other official, and may even confirm basic, easily obtainable information with the victim, like their name and address. A report in this case was made to Thames Valley Police, and the investigation was subsequently handed over to Leicestershire Police when a potential suspect in the area was identified. Leicestershire police officers arrested a 26-year-old man suspected to be involved in a courier fraud offence on Tuesday after warrants were executed at two addresses in East Leicester. The man has been released on police bail pending further inquiries. Investigating Officer P.C. Clifford said, "This type of offence is of great concern to us. Suspects are targeting elderly or vulnerable people. They sound genuine and gain the trust of the victims. The police or banks would not contact people in this way. If you get a call like this, hang up. Don't be pressured into agreeing to anything." She advised anyone who receives a call of this nature to discuss it with a family friend or member. Even if the caller says not to, and to contact the bank on a known official number. She added that your bank cards are yours and neither banks nor the police would ask for them to be handed over for safekeeping.
Calls for action after car flipped in crash. Residents of a Grove housing estate have voiced calls for better road safety after a car was flipped onto its roof in a collision at a junction, the latest in a string of crashes. A car rolled over following a crash with two others at the junction in Wellington Gate Grove on July the 8th, on a crossroads outside a school site which has become notoriously dangerous. Linking Liberator Lane, Dakota Drive, Douglas Drive and Arnold Way, each road has a give-way sign on it and is 20 miles per hour. But locals say the signs are obscured by overgrown tree branches and traffic calming measures are needed. One local, who did not want to give his name, said, "This junction has always been the riskiest part of my journey. As it's give way from every side, there is no priority. I've had many near misses on this junction because no one knows how to use it. A roundabout would make a lot more sense, or traffic lights, but I understand that it's owned by Persimmons, so they'll want to maximise profits over safety." As the estate is getting bigger and bigger, and the new school opening in September, this needs to be sorted, ideally over the next 2 months before a fatality happens. The junction is outside St John's Academy secondary school site, which is due to welcome pupils for the first time in September. A petition has been launched by locals calling on the developer to take action to reduce the danger through improved road layouts and traffic calming measures. The petition said, "Persimmon needs to take preventative measures now before a pedestrian is seriously hurt or killed, and not a reactive approach after it is too late." Natasha Owls wrote in an open letter on the issue after her partner's car caught fire following a serious collision near the crossroads. She said, "This issue is deeply personal to my family. My own children have already witnessed one of these horrific accidents. No child should have to experience that fear or witness vehicles crashing, overturning or catching fire because a junction has not been made as safe as possible. Without improvements, I fear it is only a matter of time before someone is seriously injured or loses their life." A statement from the Cambrian Learning Trust, which runs St John's Academy, said the school, the trust, Oxfordshire County Council and Persimmon have been in talks for 2 years about installing appropriate traffic calming measures near the school site. A spokesperson for the trust said, "Our key priority is the health and safety of all children and families. We would welcome further conversation and swift actions that would lead to traffic safety and calming measures. We are very much looking forward to the secondary site opening this coming September and want to make this a happy and safe experience for all concerned." A spokesperson for Persimmon Homes Wessex said, "The reported incident was very concerning. As part of the council-approved plans for the development, we will shortly be installing traffic calming measures, including speed cushions and monitoring vehicle speeds in the area. We expect these measures to be in place before the new school opens in September. We have also confirmed our willingness to deliver a pedestrian crossing outside the school, subject to Oxfordshire County Council providing the necessary design specifications and approval. Road safety is a priority, and we remain committed to working with local stakeholders to protect our customers and residents. We would also encourage all drivers to take extra care, particularly on residential roads and near schools."
Hello, this is Angelo again with the notice board, followed by some more news items. We have 5 deaths in our area to report this week. David Charles Duval died on Saturday, the 27th of June, aged 91 years. Roy Fiddler died on the 24th of June, aged 81 years. John Edward Jones passed away peacefully on the 25th of June, aged 91. David Pulley of Wantage died unexpectedly on the 28th of June, aged 68 years. And finally, Barbara Williamson, died on the 25th of June, aged 83, after a long illness. All will be sadly missed by their family and friends. We're now going to have on this day items. Sorry about getting that wrong. Right. On this day in 1606, Rembrandt, the Dutch painter, was born, and one of his most famous paintings is The Night Watch. In 971, the remains of St. Swithin, former Bishop of Winchester, were placed in a new shrine at Winchester Cathedral. According to legend, heavy rain accompanied the move, giving rise to the St. Swithin's Day weather tradition, where people say if it rains on the 15th of July, which is today, it will rain for 40 days and 40 nights. In 1099, Jerusalem was captured by the Crusaders, ending centuries of Muslim rule. In 1815, Napoleon surrendered to Captain Maitland of the ship Bellerophon at Rochefort. We now start the second half with a nostalgic item about British holiday camps.
Dance festival takes over marketplace. An annual day of dance entertained crowds of shoppers and passers-by in Abingdon's marketplace. The annual Mr. Hemmings Day of Dance took place on Saturday, hosted by Mr. Hemmings Abingdon Traditional Morris Dancers, who take their name from the former Abingdon dancer Tom Hemmings. Les Badcock, who organised the event, said he was delighted to see so many people watching the dancing in the sunshine. One of the visiting dance teams was Ashna Tribal Dancers from Abingdon. Summertown Morris also took part in the dance festival, as well as Adderbury Village Morris, which featured hobby horses in its dances. The Mr. Hemmings team was formed in 1978 with local men who had previously danced with the Abingdon Morris, and also with other men who were either born locally or have resided in the town for many years. The team has connections with a long line of Abingdon Morris dancers going back many generations.
Many aspire to these days. I always remember being mighty impressed when a school friend told me she was going on holiday to California. It seemed beyond possibility that you could get on a plane and jet off to America for a holiday. I was thinking palm trees, sun-drenched beaches, and surfable waves. I was suitably deflated to discover she was actually going to California Sands, a holiday camp on the East Anglian coast. This is because holiday camps were never really my thing. Probably not helped by a chronic 1980s British sitcom, Heidi High, which was set at the fictional Maplin's holiday camp in 1959 and 1960. As creative kids with good imaginations, we didn't much fancy regimented activities, so the nearest we got to a holiday camp was a week in a very basic seaside chalet park with a clubhouse for entertainment. Nonetheless, plenty of people have a real fondness for holiday camps, which have a long and enduring history in Britain. The first, Cunningham's Camp, was established in 1894 on the Isle of Man. Accommodation was intense and the stay included basic outdoor activities. By 1939, more than 300 holiday camps had been founded across the UK, ranging from 50 to 6,000 bed sites, mostly in huts or chalets. Probably the best known was Butlin's, founded by William Billy Butlin in 1936 in Skegness. The main British rival was Pontins, established after the Second World War in 1946. From the end of the war through the 1950s and 60s, many smaller local holiday camps popped up, cashing in on what had become a thriving industry. Entertainment was led by multi-talented staff, instantly recognisable by the colour of their blazers. Butlin's was famous for its red coats and Pontins for its blue coats. Being a holiday camp entertainer ignited the careers of many a future star, such as Jimmy Tarbuck, Bradley Walsh, and Shane Ritchie. For me, activities organised by people in brightly coloured jackets presented too many opportunities to be singled out. I've mentioned before how acutely embarrassed I have always been at the thought of making a show of myself, and consequently I do not like dancing, karaoke, or activities with audience participation in any shape or form. I get this from my mum, who didn't even want to shout aloud when she had a full house on the one occasion we went to the bingo. These days, holiday camps have evolved into more sophisticated parks with luxury lodges, caravans and even yurts, vastly different to the basic tented accommodation of Cunningham's day. There was no such thing as glamping in those days. High-end versions such as centre parks offer a highly modernised incarnation of the old-style holiday camps, with cosy cabins, tree houses nestled in woodland settings, and multiple outdoor activities for the adventurous. I did try one of the new breed of holiday parks when I was in my early 20s, after being persuaded by a bossy acquaintance. It was supposed to be relaxing in tranquil surroundings with spa treatments available. Granted, the chalet was comfortable and in a great spot, but the activities I was cajoled into trying included attempting to swim in a pool full of children who screamed every time the wave function kicked in, and cycling around bumpy paths on what felt like the world's most uncomfortable bicycle. The final straw was a horse riding excursion, my first since the bolting on the beach incident, which had made me vow never to get on a horse's back again. But in an attempt to get into the group activity spirit, I complied, first telling the stable owner I was nervous and required a suitably calm horse. The upshot is that I was paired with a nag named Walter, who was so chilled he was virtually comatose. Despite repeated attempts to get him to move, he remained with his hooves firmly rooted to the spot in the stable yard, long after the others had trotted off into the tree-lined yonder. I think that really summed up my experience with horses and holiday camps. Do you have fond memories of going to a holiday camp in your youth? Did you enjoy the all-inclusive nature and organised entertainment? Write to me with your views, recollections and pictures relating to this topic at ebrennanhere@gmail.com. That's ebrennanhere@gmail.com. Emma Brennan is an award-winning journalist and former newspaper editor with a fondness for yesteryear. Warning after field fire near village garage. A warning has been issued as multiple crews raced to a fire by an Oxfordshire garage. Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service has confirmed it attended a field fire on Farringdon Road at around 12:45 Monday. Four vehicles were in attendance, with crews using a hose reel and beaters to extinguish the flames near to Mellor's garage and workshop. A spokesman said, Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service was called at approximately 12:45 p.m. to reports of a field fire on Farringdon Road, East Challow, near Wantage. Three fire engines and a water carrier vehicle were sent to the scene. Crews used a hose reel and beaters to extinguish the fire. This comes after Oxfordshire was placed in one of the highest categories for fire risk and severity. The Countryside and Rights of Way Fire Severity Index maps displays current daily risk levels and five-day forecasts, which help trigger access restrictions on vulnerable open country and common land. A spokesperson for Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue added, our advice is to refrain from having barbecues in the countryside. Leave them for your garden where you have a water supply. Do not discard cigarettes. Put them out fully before disposing of. We see many fires on grass verges where it is believed a cigarette has been flicked out of the window.
Historic railway line closes after crash. Trains on the Heritage Railway are expected to run again at the end of the month after being cancelled after damage to a level crossing. Cholsey and Wallingford Heritage Railway has had to cancel all of its trips and events after the damage to the railway last week. A crash on the A4130 Wallingford bypass damaged equipment at the level crossing, which requires repairs before any services can resume. The railway team declined to comment on the situation, but it has been revealed they hope trains will be running again by the end of July. A spokesperson for Wallingford Town Council said, "While the trains may be temporarily paused, there's still plenty happening behind the scenes. If you've ever thought about volunteering, now could be the perfect time to get involved. There are opportunities for people of all ages and backgrounds, and no previous railway experience is needed, just enthusiasm and a willingness to help. Heritage attractions like the Cholsey and Wallingford Railway play a vital role in making Wallingford such a special place. They preserve our history, support local tourism and community life, and perfectly capture the spirit of our small town, big stories vision. Set up around 40 years ago, the Cholsey and Wallingford Railway is run by a dedicated team of volunteers on the former branch line between Wallingford and Cholsey. It runs historic, restored locomotives and carriages on the line for special events throughout the year, including seasonal and festive outings.
Warning amid surge in defib use. A surge in defibrillator usage during the recent heatwave has prompted fresh calls for action. South Central Ambulance Service, SCAS, is urging defibrillator guardians to ensure their devices are ready for use after a period, after a reported 118% increase in the number of times members of the public were directed to collect a defibrillator during emergencies. The spike was recorded during a heatwave in late June and comes as the region faces its third heatwave of the summer, with temperatures reaching the mid-30s. David Hamer, Divisional Community Engagement Manager for Thames Valley at SCAS, said, "This surge of defibrillator deployment during the last heat wave shows how vital the work of defibrillator guardians is."
World stage awaits dance school members. A Wantage dance school is preparing for the world stage. American Dance School has qualified to represent Team England at the Dance World Cup, set to take place in Dublin this month. 16 dancers aged 8 to 18 will travel to Ireland after securing top rankings in national competitions. They will compete with 11,500 dancers from over 50 different countries. Gillian Clipsham, director of ADS, said, "It's a massive honour to represent England because it is very hard to even get this far. Some of our entries placed first for the country, and two of those dancers, Sam Bridle and Ava Tatum-Hale, have been at ADS from the very start and will be leaving this year. So we are very proud to head to the World Finals with high hopes."
Hard-working councillor and ex-mayor dies. A hard-working and dedicated councillor and former mayor has died. Margaret Crick, who served on the Abingdon Town Council and was a former mayor of the town, died on July the 10th. A statement on Abingdon's Town Council's website said, "Margaret was first elected to the Town Council in 2011 and has represented the Dunmore Ward continuously since then. During her time on the Town Council, she served on many committees, including the Environment, Amenities and Infrastructure Committee, the Planning Committee and the Museum Subcommittee. Margaret also served as Mayor of Abingdon from 2018 to 2019. She was also elected to the Vale of Whitehorse District Council in a by-election in 2014 and served as a district councillor until she stood down in May 2023. It is a measure of the respect that she was held in by her fellow councillors that she was elected as chair of the Vale for four successive years, from 2019 to 2023. Margaret was a hard-working and dedicated councillor, building up a great deal of knowledge about Abingdon and particularly her Dunmore ward. She was very keen to see a cinema remain in Abingdon and was particularly pleased that the council had recently ensured this would happen. Margaret leaves two sons, David and Michael. Our thoughts go out to them and her wider family at this very difficult time. Margaret will be greatly missed by everyone who knew her.
Golden football fun at Care Home. Football fans of all ages came together for a day of games and friendly competition. Residents at Care UK's Stoufford House Care Home in Abingdon teamed up with the 7th Abingdon Beavers for a lively afternoon of football-themed activities and friendship. The event was part of Care UK's Golden Moments initiative, which aims to bring generations together and encourage residents to reminisce about cherished football memories with the local community while sharing new experiences. Colin, a resident who took part in the event, said, "I really enjoyed the day. It was lots of fun and laughter. I cheered for Andy, our maintenance man, who did a brilliant bouncing the ball. It reminded me of when I was young at school, when there was a lot of competition. I used to play in the streets with my friends, and now I enjoy watching football matches on television. I always support Manchester United." The Beavers and residents enjoyed a range of football-themed activities, including balloon games, beanbag challenges, and a football quiz.
Steam Rally Mark's 60th Anniversary Event. An Oxfordshire steam rally has been hailed as fantastic as the village celebrates its 60th anniversary event. Woodcote Steam Rally in South Oxfordshire was kicked off in style on July the 10th, transforming the field off Church Lane in Ibston into a steam-powered weekend of entertainment. The action-packed festival included the classic steam parade, games and rides on the trucks and tractors, an exhibition of stunning cars and bikes, and a huge range of entertainment. Over the weekend, attendees enjoyed birds of paradise and birds of prey and guide dog demonstrations, a circus skills workshop and entertainer for children, food and drinks, trails, fairground rides and stalls, and a mobile farm. Music included Flemish Bond, The Mythicals, Cold Harbour and Sub-Zero, among other acts which graced the stage, like the Roy Bailey Big Band and Wallingford Morris Dancers. The very first Woodcote Veteran Transport Rally was held as a one-day event in 1964, raising money for the village hall, and an annual two-day event was held from 1974, making the rally a staple in the annual village calendar.
Oxford United reveal new home kit. Oxford United have released their new home kit for the 2026-27 League One season. Aaron Ramsay's Oxford returned to the third tier for the new season after 2 years in the Championship, suffering relegation last time out. Ahead of the upcoming campaign, the U's have announced their new home shirt, which is the first chapter of the Inspire series, Art Inspires, in collaboration with Oxford artist and lifelong Yellows supporter Andrew Manny Manson. United don their usual yellow as the primary shirt colour, with a dark blue strip behind the central sponsor, Baxi, and blue also on the collar and top of the sleeves. The Macron kit is without the full Oxford United badge, using just the famous ox, creating a retro feel to the new strip. United travelled to Spain on Sunday for a warm weather training camp and will kick off their first pre-season friendly on July the 21st away at Aldershot Town. Competitive action begins on August the 8th with an away trip to Leyton Orient in the Carabao Cup. Last week the Ewes were placed under a temporary transfer embargo, meaning they will not be able to register any new signings until the January window. United had brought in one new signing in former Heart of Midlothian centre-back Frankie Kent on a free transfer before the embargo was confirmed.
That is the last item for this week. I thank the Herald series and other sources for the items we have used, and thank Brian, Paul, Alison and the readers for their time. We hope you enjoyed listening to this newspaper. Goodbye, keep safe and well, and thank you for listening.